Welcome to another episode of Innovation Somalia. I am your host, Abdul Ali. I'm coming to you from Columbus, Ohio. I'm really excited. Today's guest is somebody that most of you guys have known. She's quite popular. Most of you guys have seen her through social media. She's an author. Her name is Shukri Said Sal. She's the author of The Last Nomad. What a great and excellent book. And I'm so excited and so delighted to have her at the program. So thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Abdulkader. I am so delighted. And your wife, as you know, she's my biggest fan. So
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. There's a lot of stuff in the book, you know, especially for me, the part that I'm familiar with, you know, how you talked about your school, Saqauddin and Sheikh Hassan Barsame and all that. I went to Halataco. So I'm very familiar with that neighborhood and all that. I want to talk about a little bit about the book. It's such a beautiful and such a beautiful title. In Somalia, there's a lot of nomads. So why the name Last Nomad?
That is a good question, Andrade. I think I chose The Last Nomad because, you know, as you learn from this story, my mother had... maybe nine of us, you know, and out of our nine, we have like about six girls. So for some reason, I have been a daughter of an educated father and a nomadic mother. For them, they fought over my destiny. My mother really felt like if she was going to leave that world behind, or if she was not no longer going to be a nomad, she had to make sure one of her daughter is being given as a gift to her older, my grandmother, to her older mother. So in a way, I was the last person in my family who had lived in that life. It's not like my children living in California, you know, talking about their favorite YouTubers. I don't think they're going to go back to that world and become a nomad, you know. So the idea was that I am the last nomad. In that sense, there's really not a lot of nomads existing. You know, this is the reason I really archive this whole story. It's not only me, but three generations of women, you know, my mother, my grandmother. And this is a common story for our life. You know, you may see one person living in the city, but it's for like, there may be one generation removed from that nomadic life. You know, even children who are born here, who we are their mothers, they are one generation or two generations removed from that nomadic life, if you look at it that way.
Absolutely, because I can remember that, you know, there were some times that when the school closed that we were shipped out to, you know, in the country. And next thing you know is, you know, you're farming, you're swimming in the rivers and, you know
it was a common thing.
On the other side, the wildlife animal is not too far from it. So,
you know, and during Siad Barre, when he was doing the Ololaha of learning Somali language, the things he had done was actually he made sure anybody who can read and write, because remember, he took the Somali literacy from 5% to 50%.
Absolutely.
To do that, literally, it's a huge thing he did accomplish. So what he will do is as soon as you can write and read and you are ninth grade of high school, he will literally ship all these children to drop them in the nomadic world. You know, one of those men was actually my brother-in-law who at 14 was dropped in the nomadic family, who as soon as he came to live with them, he was teaching them through using loh, you know, that slab.
Yeah. I studied loh through the Quran, yeah.
He was using loh. I have actually all loh. He was using
loh.
Yeah?
Nice. Teach them.
Oh, yeah, I have like three or four. I'll show you. Remind me before. So he was using loh to teach them how to write Somali. And well, all they saw was he has a big appetite. He's from the city. He has a big appetite. So he was eating food. So one day they gathered together, and while he's sleeping, they left him.
Because he was eating a lot of the food, okay.
Yeah, they left him. And then he realized, I don't know if this story is worth telling, but he realized that he can't get up and know. And he's so terrified of lions and hyenas and all that. And he had like 5 shillings. So he took his money and he looked all around. The desert is the fast open land. There is nothing. So he find a road and he's just walking some road, you know, where the animals walk, where the people walk. He's walking, walking, and guess who he come face to face with? A lion.
Oh, wow.
And guess what he did? He painted. He literally painted, and you would think he painted, and you would think the lion is gonna like eat him. The lions actually, usually they're very smart. If they eat humans, they know that they will be killed or hunted. Right. So the lion just follow him until he get into whatever destination. They believe that if you're walking, people is usually are going toward the animals, the goats, the
right,
sheep.
So he just
follow him, and then eventually end up, he come to this family and he told them what was going on. Well, the minute they give him water, the lion took one of their goats. And so the family started hitting him. But what did they, you brought the lion to us?
Interesting. It's a nomad life. It's kind of sad, but the life of nomad right now, it's kind of sort of on a winding down. There isn't much people like the old days that actually, you know, they used to hop on. So I want to touch a little bit of that nomad and lifestyle from your mother. And, you know, like, you know, some of your books kind of sort of starts with like you were just, you know, right out the gate running, right? So experiencing life as a very young age, I don't want to say difficulties, but that is just the life that was the way of life at the time. It didn't seem different.
Yeah, it is just the way it was. And you know, Abdulkadir, one of the things I really wanted to do for our people is Somalis. I noticed for me, I was fortunate enough to be the daughter of a well-educated father, to have a big house in the city, and then to live also to have that nomadic connection, right? But for a lot of Somalis, I think they carry a shame about it, like the Reba Diamonds. You're a farmer, a bush-like person who doesn't know anything. But you know who, and if you are running away from that shame, the ramification of that is you're not gonna capture the history of your people, right? This beautiful history that make us who we are, right? And so I am a daughter. In fact, my father was visiting one of his sister who was married to my mother's tribe, right? And in Dapad area, he was visiting her when he saw a young 15-year-old girl, like literally shimmering like the desert she come from, you know? And he was smitten with her beauty. But, you know, it wasn't it's not like my mother, you know, my mother lived in that world, not her mother, all these generations of women lived in that world. That was her life. She did not know any other life but the desert, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the city life was this unseen galaxy, you know? So one of the thing is for me, being when my mother chose me, and I don't know if the first time we get it right, but I will repeat it, you know. You know, I was born as my mother is fourth daughter by the time she decided.
I wanted to clarify one thing. So now, were you born at the city, then went to nomadic, or you were born nomadic, then I know eventually you end up in the city.
Yeah, it is interesting because my mother, you are absolutely right, Abdulkadir. My mother couldn't quite untangle herself from that world, right?
Okay.
So look at these children who, gotcha, as soon as it's good time, we will go and we will go and see, go to get our goats, milk, all of that. When it's good, the rainy season, we go there, we flock around with the baby goats, sheep, baby camels, right? My mother believed in good camel milk, which all Somalis believe.
Absolutely.
There's nothing, and there are research coming out about the camel milk. There's nothing that camel milk can't take care of it. So as children, we ate all of that. So because of that, also my mother, she had some business. So one of the deals she made with my grandmother made with my father was make sure my daughter lives at the edge of this area. She didn't quite let him go to Galkayo. I think they stayed around Dabat area. And that was because my grandmother felt like my mother was still, again, my daughter is just turning 16. Imagine at 15 and half, you married an older guy, 45, and you're just a baby. If now looking back, I realize she was just a child, right? So because of that, I think you were asking me, so that's kind of if I have to give you a background, that's the background. So as children, we were,
So you were born in the city, then.
I was born actually in Dapat area. I was born in Dapat.
Born in Dapat
the
area.
Edge
okay,
of the
okay,
nomad.
okay,
yeah.
Okay. So this book, there's a lot of mama, you know, there was a lot of
yeah.
beautifully too. It starts with the premise,
yeah, Somali proverbs, yeah,
right,
beautiful.
Right, absolutely. What is one that kind of sort of designated with you? I know they're all one designated. They kind of sort of touch on a little bit on your life as you went
yeah,
from nomad
I think,
to
you know,
city.
When I was, first of all, I want to give credit to my brilliant brother who passed away. He was used to go by G.H. Wilwal. And I have to say, I'm still, you know, it's still hard for me.
When did he pass away?
He passed away about 2 years ago, and he literally almost died with him because I had chased him all over everywhere to try to save him, you know, but in the end I couldn't. It was because my brother was well, he read a lot and he had a deep understanding of English literature and Somali literature. He was the only really one who was smart enough to translate. So I'm going to show you.
Okay.
And so in each Somali proverbs here, for example, the one he talks about, the mother, he said, it's that chapter calls the ageless desert, Hoyad Walla Mahuran, right?
Yeah.
And in translation, it says only a mother is indispensable.
Yeah.
So for him to, he has to think about it, you know, like he has to, each proverb I have to think about and see where it will fit. And I think I really wanted to say, I appreciate how he did it, you know. Another one I am, and this is so true for so many Somali people. Let me see if I can read. This is again the first chapter, Nomad, right? It says, Hoyaday aniga iyo alol adeg bayna dashay. Now, if
like
you
that
don't,
one, yes, I like that one. I like that one.
You know what? Like, you have to really, anybody else would have translated it like word by word, but
right,
here
right,
is my
right.
brother where he come in.
Yeah.
He has to think of it, what is the bigger picture it's trying to convey. And he said, alongside with me, mother gave birth to an indomitable will. I think that is really, really beautiful. There's another one.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Another one is also, this is when we end up in Garissa. Yeah,
yes,
this is the paperback and you have the hard copy.
Yeah.
When we end up in Garissa, here we are. We run away from our home. We don't know where we're going. We have been through a lot. And in this one, I chose another one of his proverbs. Again, his name is G.H. Wilwal. He goes by that. But a lot of people actually know him. This is when we realize we don't have a land. It is time. It is a tough time. And here, the translation of that, oh, Lord, how sad it is the soul that leaves it is native land.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. And
and
that's
I
something
think,
that we all experience. It resonates so well.
It is, Abdelkader, because this book is really my love letter, my I don't even know how many, like, this is really me trying to capture this, you know, Wari Meside Warhakaharo.
Yes, yes. Totally.
And not only for you and me, for all the generations that come. Abdelkader, one of the things I'm really trying to do is my intention, as you know, I'm an author, I'm an actor, I do other things in life. One of the things I was really trying to do initially is just write the memoir and be done. But when I realized the need for our stories to be told, our Somali stories to be told, I really thought, wow, I can't just stop that. And I remember talking to your beautiful wife about it and realizing there's really need for an author who have love for his or her people to write this story. And that's when it really hit me. I have to go back the beginning. That's why recently now I submitted a children's book, picture book, called Subin's First Day of Herding, as in a young girl who's trying to herd the animal. The second book, which is a 40,000 done, is another middle grade book. And then I'm gonna go back to an adult. I really feel, Abdelkader, like I have so much love for my people that I really wanted for them to be able to have these books. And these books are being used to university, especially St. Paul universities in Minnesota. A lot of them are using. And I know our people are not, they come from oral tradition. And now with social media, they rather, you know, they rather talk or say, but there is an important thing for us, all of us, to write our stories and to share and to leave something for the coming of age. Because if you don't have your compass, if you don't know who you are, if you don't have that compass that anchors you,
absolutely,
then it is
absolutely.
Easy to be, any wind can blow you out. You
easily,
know what I mean?
Easily for it to disappear. Absolutely, absolutely.
Exactly,
absolutely.
Any wind can push you off your gravity because you don't have an anchor.
You
and
know,
me,
sometimes that what I have a hard time with personally is that differentiating, we are a society of oral versus we are a society that who don't want to write things down. So for me, it's like, okay, well, at what point do you say it's a culture? Okay, we like our culture, we want to stick with our culture. But at some time, the world is evolving. It's in a place that, you know, you don't want to be left behind. Other people are kind of sort of capturing their own things. Why not us? You know, you don't get to see stories. Maybe I could be wrong, but you don't get to see stories past 1900, past 1800s or 1700s that are like really talks about, you know, the historic aspect of like the Somalis and stuff. There is some religion aspect of it, and you got to see some of that, but you don't get to see the average Abdi that who's just, you know, what are their life
exactly,
like?
Exactly, 1700, exactly.
1600 and stuff like that. Because Somali was not like, you know, right now. I mean, right now, our generation, it's kind of sort of making their own dent. And there's another book that I like is the other guy from Maine. Is it from Maine or Abdi Iftin? I enjoyed his book so much because in the war, I can relate to that. On the Civil War, I didn't get to experience much because I left while Siadbur was there. But yet, you know, I was in Kenya and I know what's like to experience hardship. You understand?
Yes.
But not the hardship. It's a different hardship when you're in actually in the war lifestyle versus the, you know, the refugee lifestyle. But they're both hardship. I guarantee you on that.
Yeah.
His book captures
really,
so much too as well. So I was really kind of excited because I can relate to that, you know.
Oh yeah, and that is, you see how excited you felt when you read my book, when you read Abdi's, it's called Call Me American. And I
Call
think
Me American, absolutely, absolutely,
a young
absolutely.
Guy, so I think everybody should check that book out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think what is important is what's Abdi's writing, what am I writing? And it is all of us, we are trying to archive our stories. And actually, Abdelkader, I am now doing, for the past 1 year and a half or 2 years, I have been archiving stories. So the plan is to do podcasts, whether it's going to be English or Somali, I haven't decided. But I have all these stories of people encountering lion in the mostly desert story. Some people telling me their travel, how they cross the land. Some people are coming from, there's even people coming from Mexico, some women who
absolutely,
were.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
So I felt like all of these things, like, who is going to do it for us if we are not? And even like here, I moved to San Diego. And one time I am going to places to see Balboa Park. There are actually this indigenous houses of different culture, Norway, Mexico. And I'm like, well, we have a huge Somali community and they don't have it. So this is where I decided, you know what, I'm going to get involved and see what I can do when time comes. So collect all of these items, collect the stories, and have that thing available. Somalis, unfortunately, when they think of Dhaqan Celis, it is The Dakhan'ilis is this and us, right?
That word is so...
That word is so misused and it is used to torture children. From here in Abd Qadir, and they like, we're now trying to create a documentary about a young guy who literally, like a slave, was chained for 3 years in Hamar.
Oh,
I kid you not, when I heard that story, I cried because
it
I'm
hurts.
A mother of youngsters, and I'm like, what is wrong with you where you're a mother or a father, and you tell your these kids, take them in, tell them, oh, you're just gonna see, and they are, you give to people and they're chained. I think our people don't think like, what is happening to my child's mind? I chain him like a slave, and then I am responsible as their parent, and all this crazy thing. It's not like, and then when children, when I say this is the real learning about your culture, knowing about your root, they go, no, no. They force us with, they try to force us learning Quran, but then they're not happy the way we're learning. So they push us, they take us to Somalia, they chain us, they drop us out of nowhere, take our passport, our money. Are you crazy? Why are you doing this to your children?
Yeah.
We have to stop this.
I know. It's very challenging that, you know, it goes to the mama hatere Allah dib badana, you know, a soul that ulkeeda ka soo tagta ama ulkeeda
dhimato. Yeah.
So these are the challenges that we're going through here, you know, in qurbada. People think that qurbada is easy. It's not easy. If you get off that track, God help you.
Yeah,
we are all on a
and
track,
you know,
you know.
Abd Qadir, they have to, like, we're raising our children here. Yeah. I remember, like, right now, when my kids were young, there's a picture I was showing yesterday, somebody, of me roller skating with my son. He's 1 year, and I have my roller skating shoes, and I'm pushing him with some, to teach him his own thing. So I learned how to ride a bike. I learned how to roller skate. I learned how to skate, and I learned how to ski. All to keep up with my children. We have to adapt, but in a healthy way. It doesn't mean you leave who you are behind. In fact, you are more powerful when you know who you are, and then you are learning, you are willing to learn others, and you are willing to take the best of everything to produce the best of you.
And that's how it should be. Oftentimes that people think that, you know, the Ghana'ilis just ship them and, you know, magically they will appear all cleaned and all well pulled together and all that. It's not, you know, you know, I spent enough time in corporate America. One thing that they say is that, you know, a couple of hours you spend this project, it's another couple of hours you didn't spend that project. So it means that, you know, a couple of hours that you shipped your kids to in somewhere else, it's another couple of hours that you didn't spend teaching them, you know, how to be a better person, how to be a better adult and all that. So it's challenging on that. You know, I relate to your books because it's a little bit before Siad, but and I relate to the other Abdiftin's thing, it's after Siad Barre. So I can see both. Everybody, if you don't know this book, I challenge you to go and look it up. Shukri, Saeed, Sal. It's the audio book is by far the best. You know, you can do multiple things, listen to. I don't know how you chose that person. That person is just the accent and it's just delightful. Delightful.
She did very well, Abd Qadir.
Excellent.
We have to
was that your choice, or it was the audio publisher that who suggested that person?
No, actually I made it very clear that I wanted somebody from Africa to be the narrator of my book, but I wanted to give broader, like anybody from like different part of Africa.
Absolutely,
doesn't have to
absolutely.
necessarily. So there was a Somali girl they brought, there was a two Ethiopian women and one Kenyan. And I have to listen, and they told me they have in mind somebody they like so far, but they wanted me to see who I would choose. And I end up choosing also the Kenyan lady because she was very organized and she was very, her voice was following the rhythm of the story. But what I also like about Ayan Abd Qadir is she, whenever also it is hard Somali, I will go in and do the talk, you know, I'll go in and say, you know, like all the Somali proverb, I didn't want it to be ruined. So I will come in. Also, there is here, I wanted to show you As you, you can talk, go ahead and keep talking if you want, but I wanted to show you an area that has like a little bit of singing, I think, and also that same area I come into because I didn't wanna. So that like she was the Somali proverbs or something that's kind of require me my voice. I come in and I say I was the one who was talking. So it was almost the book was kind of a marriage between this lady and I trying to both narrate this book for you. So for example, in here there's an area where I and I can read some passages for you as well. But in here it's a, we're talking about when we're making yogurt, you know, and it says, So it, and then she can do the English version of it. But I think the whole book is honestly full of a lot of good stuff for our people.
A
The
lot of
other
good
thing,
stuff.
yeah, how
And
many minutes
I
left for
liked
you?
how Ayeyo was used to throw out the whole book.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were not Somali by then, you understood what Ayeyo meant. It was well put together for I enjoyed it. I mean, you can do multiple things while you listen to it. So when you moved to the city, versus the nomadic life versus the city. I know there was a process you have to go through to kind of sort of establish in a place to call home. That was, from your sisters to being switched to different schools and not liking. Also, Mahayat and the new friend that you made that got shot. Sagal, I think it was her name. So there was a lot of challenges now. And I saw another interview that you did, and I think it was Abdi Iftin too at the same time. One of the things that was he asked his mom, or was that you? I'm not quite sure. One of the things that people miss from nomadic life is the freedom. And what made so from your experience, coming to the city life versus the nomadic life, what are the challenges that you actually had to face on a
I
day to
think for
day?
me, honestly, my nomadic life, first of all of that, what it prepares you is when you, when home, definition is of home is always shifting, right? There is the
Absolutely.
desert, there is Galkayo, there is the orphanage, there is Somali Civil War, then Kenya, Garissa, different parts of Kenya, then Canada, then California. Home was always shifting. And if something, as a nomad, if one thing you, it taught me was adapting, the ability to adapt no matter where you are thrown at. That ability to adapt was so important. But for me, I felt like the desert, for a child who was, you know, I had one of, was one of those big ear ch child with curious who talk very fast. I was, you know, and I think desert was a place that held my imagination. I would go on top of the Termai Mountain thinking that the desert and the sky has a place of meeting. It's harsh, you know, drought hits, rainy season can hit, but also, you know, you're always moving. Even within the desert, the definition
I
of
wanted to ask you specifically on that, and it's one of my lists, so might as well just get to it. So walk us through like any given day, what is the lifestyle like?
In the book, I describe the journey my grandmother would do. You know, it will start with on a moving day how they have to move. Usually, it will start with looking and seeing your animals, the grass they were consuming. It's kind of dwindling down. There's not much. Water is also drying out. Wells are drying out. Life is changing, and so they were very good at looking at the skies. Or sending a scout to find a better area, better grazing land, better water, you know. So, and or they will anticipate it, we need to go move back that area because that is the area it rained. So, despite being in a fast urban land, the desert was marked for a different. For example, like they may say that is Lefa Ayr area. Maybe that is where the Ayr tribes had lost a lot of their men in there. or Mayday, that is a Wagarna, that is where a well lion, a well-known lion was killed by a brave Somali man, or that is, you know, that's close to Sanaag area. You name it, every area is marked for within the desert, despite being open, or a tree that's bent. So when a person finds out, okay, this is the place we need to go, like from, in my case, my uncle would come back and say, hey, I found a place. And next day, it will be a moving day. And so what we do is we dismantle the akal, the hut, and then we put everything we own into the camels. You know, these are camels who were tamed and know how to do this.
Yeah.
And so when it's put it, somebody will be herding the camels, somebody will be herding the goats, somebody will be herding the cows. In my family, we had only camels and goats and sheep. So that is how a moving day is. You move to your next destinations, you settle in. Sometimes you're at a day away or a night, 2 days away. In that case, like we will settle in a place where it's a temporary shelter area. So we will settle in, we'll have the fire going on from all corners, and we have our animals in the center, because that's not home yet. We still need to continue.
Right.
But in a day-to-day life is getting up in the morning, going herding the goats, taking them, keeping the baby goat or the baby camels at home, and then letting the animal graze the whole day, different area, and then coming back home, milking the animal, letting the baby suckle, and then, you know, to get the fire going on. Again, we share the land with lions and hyenas who will be happy to take our animal. So that is sort of how a life of a nomadic.
That's from sunrise to sunset.
Yep.
So what are you, as an individual that who's with those sheep and those camels, what would you eat for lunch?
We would eat like, we would have milk always. We have our deer to carry, our water to carry, or sometimes literally you can cook your hand and just the milk, the goats just right. I have seen it where I would just lie down on the goat and then get up and just milk it on my, you know, everything. We eat like hop and yip, we will eat a meat. We will take meat we preserve from few seasons ago when we have plenty. Yeah. Of animals to slaughter, and when rainy season is that a time to get ready for a drought, dry season.
So what is the longest time that you will stay in one given place?
Excuse me. I think that changes, but for us, we would maybe 4 months, 6 months for our family, but that depend on how, what's happening, you know, how long that rain lasted, how many grassland, how many goats and sheep or camels you own. Now, don't forget, young girls mostly, and that is not true for every family, as I'm now archiving stories I'm learning. Young girls are looking after the goats and sheep and the cows, but men and young guys, they have to learn from the get-go, from the older guys, how to herd the camels. Remember, camels, they are 3 weeks away, a month away. And usually the way they do is they will leave three or four camels and the family's male camel that we carry our equipment and our hat and all of that. They will keep it around. But the rest of the Horween girl have to go with the camel herder who may or may not be, you know, accessible for 3 or a month sometimes. There is a story I don't know if my husband knows this, that I'm on the phone. There is a story where my grandmother, who's a well-known poet that time, her poet went to viral in the nomadic people. My grandmother's name was Halima Hirsibile, but in her poetic name was Hiddi Hoog Hardali. So Hiddi Hoog Hardali, it's a mouthful. And so think of this 12 years old girl who from a very young age, her poet went viral, you know? And in this young girl, men who were coming, her poet, which she was trying to this another tribe. When she was coming back, when the men of my tribe were, her, my grandmother's tribe were coming back, they ask a passage, a safe passage to another tribe, and they said, so who are you? And then they said, oh, we are like this, this. Oh, you are a haddi hoga hordali is man. And they, you know, men do not want a woman being a higher position or her name giving them a passage.
Yeah.
And it had been 2 years since they went back to home, because again, camels can wander for sometimes years, you know, sometimes they come back with plenty of babies, or it gets bigger and right. It's just, you know, life, you know.
Yes.
And they came back and they were telling her, they looked at each other. Eventually, with some explanation, they realized their 12-year-old poet went viral in the Nomad. So I always find that story interesting, and it's so Somali of us.
See, that's what I mean. Like, if we would have been captured now, like for your kids and your kids' kids, you know, could definitely, are you capturing all that?
I captured all that, like actually, and my goal is to really keep capturing many more stories like that. And so for me, that story may end up in, I don't think it made it to the book, because they have to, you know, edit it out, some of the thing. There's another amazing story of my father. My father was one of a twin, and I want to be mindful of your time, but I think you can edit out the best of everything.
Yes.
I think, and let me tell you this one, I think it's a very interesting story that didn't make it as well. But my father was one of a twin, and my father actually come from two different tribes. You can say the two tribes, like the Darod and Hawi, who were killing each other in Somalia. That's my father, okay? So what he was doing is, when my grandfather married my Ayeyu, think of a young, beautiful girl with long hair who's very pregnant, staring, living in a hut, staring in this vast open land, and she's pregnant with a twin. So, and you know, nomads, when you are living in an area, and I am a traveler, and I am traveling, what I'm going to do, Abdul, is I'm going to look ahead and see any sign of life. Sometimes you see a smoke. Sometimes you see people's track, animal fresh. And when you see a track, you need to be able to tell whether this track is 2 days old, 3 days old, or a week old.
Wow. And you could do that.
You could do that. I learned early on. And in fact, subsequent stories would have it. It doesn't have to be like me, but the characters would, that's how we're going to navigate.
Right.
So this man saw this house, and he come upon them, and he can see my grandfather looked very distressed. And he asked him, again, my grandfather received a guest. This man found a place. They received a guest. But he can see the man is pacing. And he said, is there a problem? And he said, yes, my wife gave birth to one child, and there's another child stuck on her. So the man said, hiya. He listened, and he said, ha, halmia. What had Subisen? He said, do this. He said, remember the udub is a central log that keeps the house. Weight, you know, every house when we architect, we think of how the weight distribution is equal.
Yeah.
I think it's the distribution of weight, because you don't want the house collapsing. The nomads think about it. So he say, find the udub, because they know the udub is also the strongest one, and it's deeply dug, right? Find the udub, he said. I kid you not. He say, tie the rope, the top of the udub, which is the central log. So, and bring that rope down, he said. Suspend her in like a sitting position, he said. And tie the second part of the rope. It's like this area is called the fundus. It's like the top of your stomach, like your rib cage. You tie. So you tie the top, and the second part of the same rope, you pull it down, you tie it on her rib cage. Now, he said, after you made the knot, take the same rope and downward, he said, push it. Creating like a tourniquet feeling, where you're going downward. So the rope is literally pushing whatever. The stomach is distended, and as it pressure comes from the top, everything is going to push downward.
Yeah.
And my father come to the world 3 days later like that. And to me, that is one of those such a nomadic. Not only did my grandmother give birth to my father and my aunt Sido, she had three sets of twins in her life. She didn't die of infection. She didn't die of anything. That is how much the knowledge of the desert people.
No, there's no way comparison the knowledge that they have versus the knowledge that we learn from books. Absolutely no comparison. It's like it's like here going to college, and when you graduate and you get that piece of paper and you come outside, it's completely different lifestyle on the workplace. Everything you learn, basically it's molding you to be teachable. That's the only thing that it, so in your brain it's like, okay, well, whatever this new place has to offer, I have to learn. I have to learn. So you're always in a learning mode, but nowhere near the knowledge and how much they obtain. And I wish those are like the historical things that we should have written down in, you know, such a long time ago.
Yeah, and you know, Abdul, they do that. Like, I remember my grandmother, she used to fix broken bones. I remember as a child when I have like kuskuski or hayabahas, I think chickenpox they call it in English. She would heal. There are trees that I learned, the bil'il tree. Marke, when she circumcised us, she literally dug a hole, used the bil'il, smoke of the bil'il tree to heal us. So we have to sit in the hole and there's a fire burn. She used the plumble tree. There is so much trees.
So much knowledge. I mean, just living off the land
yeah.
will give you so much. So much things that you need to learn, and you can apply that to day to day. They, you know, you might not understand like how to get a, you know, pen and, you know, paper to write the state down, but you know, you can count the the stars and navigate your way out and look at where you wanted to go. So
yeah,
those are the
there is no map, for example, Abdul. There is no, there's no map in the desert. When you, my mother would walk like 100 miles. Maybe in 2 days or three days, they knew how to go faster, and they go, okay, ha, yeah, Radhanesa, who are you looking at? Those guys, ha, they say they live like, go to those, when you keep walking, when you come upon two birds, the tree, or the duma is shaped like a lion or hyenas, go in between them. When you go in between them, left, go lean into your left. And then after that, to your right, there should be, if you make a right decision, to your right, there should be
Oh, not only that, it's, if you think about it, like, you know, when I first came here, this was like 25 years ago, 26 years ago, there was no cell phone, there was no nothing. And we picked up and we left from Columbus to Syracuse. This was like, from Columbus, Ohio to Syracuse, New York. To visit some family members that came like maybe a couple of months later. So this is just a brand new, like we don't speak English, we're nothing. We just went to a gas station, bought or something, me and my friend, I'm like, boom, let's go. So, you know, we were having a hard time reading it, but we had that sense of direction. Like, okay, this is the main road that we're on. My sister at the time, who actually sponsored us, she passed away, but she kind of guided, like, okay, you need to be on this freeway, you need to be on that freeway, you need to be that freeway. So, but imagine not knowing how to read a map coming here, because those are the sense of direction you have in back home. It's like, you know, you go here, you go there, you have a direction of where you wanted to head, but yet you just kind of sort of go in between houses. There's no in percent like a street name, or there's no such a thing.
And it is even more confusing when it is a vast open land, but they knew it, you know. Sometimes you could be traveling, like in, I would tell you a quick story of my mother. She was nine, almost seven, 8 months pregnant with one of my sister, and she had did the same journey, had traveled quite a bit. So she had traveled some time from the butt to all the way. So she's trying to be with her mother. I think she's trying to give birth into the desert, right? Which is what she did, my mom. She always liked to be around her mother when she's giving birth. So she kept traveling. And then she heard, you know, enclosure, you know, nomads sometimes when you have to move, you know, you open your enclosure, you know, everything. If an animal is too sick to go with you, you just leave them there, you travel. So she heard some kind of a sound coming from an enclosure. So she said maybe the family had forgotten some kind of a baby or baby a sheep or something, or a goat or a camel give birth. She didn't know. As soon as she opened, and it is nighttime, she's been traveling. She opened the gate and she entered. And all of a sudden, crazy hyenas start jumping all over the place. She come upon a feasting hyenas. She walked in into an enclosure full of a feasting hyenas.
And she was
literally,
9 years
and
old.
My so pregnant mom was startled. She goes like, "Awowi l'adab." Your forefathers go to hell. She said, "Awowi l'adab." Marika, it is just like,
as long as you can do that.
Yeah, like, can you imagine being 7 months pregnant? And she knows this this lions and hyenas knew not to mess up with her. They were probably eating some kind of a dead animals or something that was left behind, knowing that it couldn't make the journey. You know, life hinged in survival. Like, it was the Darwinism to the, like, the what do you call, the test of the fittest, you know, that, like,
yeah.
If you can't make it, you can't make it.
Yeah.
If you could, you move on.
Yeah.
So
yeah. There's no like al-jilaa, you know. There's no this happened, that happened.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Like, you just
so
deal with
I
it
feel
and you
like,
move on.
Abdul, you can say we all come from a strong gene, because this is the survivalist of the fittest. So
Yes,
those of us who survive, we should be happy.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of an excellent book, and I can tell there's a lot of things that inspire. But, you know, like, what inspired, in your perspective, to write this book?
For me, honestly, is what I was really mentioning earlier, and there's an African proverb that says, when an elder dies, a library is burned, right? That, imagine, you know, I'm almost at the age of, you know, I'm almost heading to 50, like, literally, I'm like, literally, like, there. So imagine, I am saddled with this whole knowledge and wisdom, not only mine, that of my mother, that of my grandmother, and that of my mother is my grandmother, my mother's grandmother, right? All this woman they kept.
You were able to experience your grandma and great grandma while you were.
Yeah, I was able
okay.
to imagine. I'm saying the wisdom of my mother is also of her mother and her grandmother. So I have experience with my mother and my grandmother, but they carry a century-old wisdom as well with them, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like I did not want all that knowledge to die with me, because we also have a generation who do not know what it's like to be in Somalia, the desert, what it's like to grow up in Mogadishu. So this book, I must say, Abdul, it's not only about the desert. It is my life in Galkayo. It's my life in the in Hamar. It talks about being young, you know, having crush on boys, going to Sheikh Hassan Barsami School, which is a school that Sheikh Sakhawuddin, I only went 1 year. I hated it. I couldn't speak Arabic. So they changed me to Sheikh Hassan Barsami. So at the heart, really, that was my high school, Sheikh Hassan Barsami. But also just living the life of Mogadishu, you know, as it pulsates with it is essence and its life. So to me, I can smell Mogadishu, I can smell the breeze. I put all
that
of
was
that.
The center of downtown, you know, like,
I
love
was
that
born there
place.
Because
Yeah,
I lived
yeah,
in
yeah.
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 I was at the heart of Mogadishu. And we learned so much of that time. We remember a time Somali women were not clothed up with, you know, barka. We remember Somali women wearing dira, perfume, you know, guntino, swain. So I literally wanted to capture all that and put it in a book for you. And then whatever I could not write about it in image, the smell, I describe it to you, you know. And so I think that is, to me, that is leaving something, that so that library of me is not burned down. I put it in a book. It's not leaving orally. I put it in a book. So even if long after I'm gone, it is here for you, Somalis.
The Last Nomad. It's an excellent book. And if you didn't get a chance to check it out, I highly recommend. This talks about Well, we throw as diaspora, we throw the word nomad loosely, but what I'm telling you this is that this talks about like living from one place to another place in a month given time. Boom, you will understand the lifestyle on that. What part in Mogadishu did you live?
I lived in Bond area. Bond area, yeah. But and again, that was ever changing, always changing, right? Again, we were always moving, we were always coming to. So those who will read will really know more. And I want to point out that for them to check out my website, shukrisal.com, that's where I put free stories. And you will know other projects. For example, there is a picture book coming out. There is a middle grade book on the way. And all of the other projects, I am in it. This book, it is an editor's book for Amazon. It is available. It's a what's called a library of journal recommend for all of this library. It is available in every bookstores in America and in Canada. And there's also Italian version out now
Yes, I
called
was going to ask
Ultima
you
Nomad.
that. Yeah, I find that out that it got translated to Italian language.
Yeah.
How long was that project itself? It took some time.
It was luckily what we have to do is the publishers hire another publisher, and I just learned it took a year, and that publisher just reached I actually It took a year, and that publisher just this March, I went on a book tour. I went in Kenya, Nairobi, and then I went to Sweden and I went to Italy for the Italian book tour.
Version of it.
And it's one of their best-selling books in Italy for this company. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Really,
So
I'm so proud.
hey, we're all proud of you. And I'm so delighted that you gave me the opportunity just to kind of sort of having a discussion with you. I mean,
Thank you so much.
oftentimes I see you on in social media. But now having that one-on-one discussion, it kind of sort of brings the light to it, some of your beautiful experiences. I mean, you are one lucky person because, we talk about a little bit, we touch the wall in between, but you literally lived the wall in between in enough time to absorb the stories and how life could change in going forward for you. So, how do you find time to do all these projects? Because these are such excellent projects that you have in your hands on.
Yeah, thank you, Abdul. I think honestly, time is always fleeing. It's hard to find time. Like I know this weekend, because of how busy I am, I'm not gonna have a chance to write, and it bothers me. Other times I go, sometimes in the evening you want to spend time with family, and most of the time I
Absolutely.
caught it,
Absolutely.
get caught on that. But sometimes I'm trying to say, take a time from that, maybe write 1 hour. Weekend is where I try to write, and honestly, I believe if something's your passion, you can even find more time to write. It's hard to balance full-time job and then this project, which I am very passionate about it. But I find I'm archiving stories, so time is I take a little bit from here, a little bit from here, and I do whatever that I feel that day is saying. Okay, some days my check. Picture book wants to be written. I feel that some days I go, I don't want to write middle grade book today. I'm gonna write my adult book, which is another character, and I just go that whatever I feel inspired to do that. And sometimes I don't feel like writing, and I just listen to my body. But what pushes me every time is I know I want to do that. I just not only my story, but I also want to archive diaspora experience, and that's what I am after at that. The nomad, the diaspora, all kind of lives that we Somalis are very diverse. So for me, what I'm trying to say is, despite our diversity, because we have Somalis in Europe, Somalis in Canada. Like I lived with the hippies for almost 22 years. So a lot of people say I act a little bit like hippie the way I do, So even within the Somalis, there is within diversity within us, So for me, I feel like as a Somali, my gift to my people is to really keep bothering, even when I don't feel like writing, to keep writing, to capture our stories, not only for us, for the next generation, so they have their canvas more straight, you know. I feel like as a Somali who left Somalia, I'm happy to go back to Somalia, but I'm not sure if I can live in Somalia. I have changed.
Yeah. I agree I mean? With you that I agree that with you. Have you been back since you left?
I went back to Nairobi. That's the closest
that's
I come.
About it.
And
Okay.
one of the thing
okay.
is I need closure from Somalia, but violence and I'll like
yeah.
Somalia that I am nostalgic for, that I am aching for, that I wanna sift through their soul and the soil and the Somalis that exist today may not be the same.
No, absolutely not. It's not the same. Imagine after the war now, that the somebody that was born now is like in their 30s. So if somebody was born 1991, now they're in their 30s, they have their own family and stuff too. So which is completely different. They have their own different thinking, you know. You know, have you ever heard the term that Mahayatan, you know, Mera Mesha Titaliskadiga, Mesha the Il Ada Isha Liskatara? So which
I
means
think
that,
you have it in the book,
yeah.
in the prophet.
So Somali take it, if you don't want to live the same way that they do, how are you? You'll be the outlier somehow. So you'll be
You
people.
will,
Yeah.
they definitely,
So
yeah.
yeah. So it's unless you want to be the same, you know, get into the same mess that everybody else is in, it will be difficult for somebody to go. But now I wanted to ask you the question where, if you were to take your kids, is there a place that Mahayatin, that in nomadic, that you could take your kids to experience what you had experienced, or there's some family members left that that they can just, you know, go live with them for a couple of days and actually experience lifestyle like that?
Yeah, I think my family is, for my mom's side of the family probably would be like Dabat, you know, because maybe it is something I can say. I was born in this desert and I would like to see how life changed there
Thank you.
and what is happening. So maybe that is on Galkaya where my father had his house. So those are the two areas that I really feel like I need to see and maybe show my children, you know. But I also long for Mogadishu. But as a nomadic, maybe Dabat area, I would say, because that's very connected to the deserts as well that my ancestors come from. Yeah.
Well, like you and me, we wish Somalia to be in a place that where we like to go back and check them out and
And
go
it is
towards.
this July 1st was Somalia Independence Day.
Yes,
We like to wish Somalia
yeah.
a happy birthday to Somalia, and freedom is a big thing. And I hope we can all think about what are we doing for our people. I hope we can get rid of Qabil thing,
Yes.
because more and more we are actually learning that our DNA are more connected to our mother. There's an NPR talk that was talking about. So I said, if you actually, your mom is Hawiye or your father is Darod, I do believe actually you are more Hawiye than Darod, and vice versa, because we are learning all of this information. You are always both of your parents, but the idea that always the father is taken when the mother is the one who actually for sure knows that you are her child more than the father. To me, I really want to disturb that and say, hey, let's think, you know, we are more connected to our mother. And to be honest, like that Qabil thing does not really exist. I hope we can really cut down, because I see so many people sometimes who try to connect with me and then they try to find out my Qabil and then try to use that card on me. And I find it very disturbing that this nowadays that we're doing those kind of things. And every Somali that enters my orbit, you let me know you're Somali, you're a good person, I will receive you. I don't have time. It's like you know better. You know better.
Yeah.
Period. You know better. You grew up here. You've been here 25 years. If I've been here 30 years, another person has been 15 years. You know better. You cannot teach your children the garbage that divides us, to kill us, to cause Somali to wash the blood of another Somali, period.
And I think that's a good message to send out to. And when can we expect another book?
The children's book is going to come out. We hand it to the publishers. They have to hire an illustrator. So it's going to come out 2025. I am also working on the Last Nomad for a young adult version. I realize that's the fastest way that that can come out. And in the meantime, go to the website shukrasal.com for quick stories if you're interested. And then honestly, I don't know for the middle grade book, I'm maybe 40,000 words down. And so I probably need another 20,000 words, and it goes through edit. So every year I will try to finish a book. It is a big thing, but that's my goal.
I wish you good luck. You're doing great, great work. Excellent, really inspired.
Thank you, Olalo.
Especially capturing the life of Somalis and archiving all those documents. And maybe hopefully you got to do a documentary too as well.
Yeah, I really hope so. Yeah.
So I want to say thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank
I appreciate it. Very, 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 very excited. So thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Wish you and the family happy Eid as well. Take care, guys.
Right. You too as
Take
well.
Care.
Salam. Hey.
Salam
alaikum. Hey. Thank you.
Salam.
Thank you. Thank you.